Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Coming up today, my guest is author Jim Miller, and the discussion will be on the ESPN layoffs. Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. My guest this week is James Andrew Miller, who is the author of the ESPN Oral History, as well as Saturday Night Live and CAA. And Jim Miller, as people know, has been a multiple guest on this podcast. And this week we're going to talk about the ESPN layoffs. As many of you who are listening to this know, company let go of 100 people, incredibly talented people, many, many reporters and journalists, and sort of changes dramatically, I think, what ESPN is, certainly internally, having talked to a lot of people. And I've been through maybe 8 or 9 layoffs during my time at Time Inc. It sucks. It's the absolute worst. You know, I didn't lose my job, and obviously that's great, and I can, you know, pay my bills and feed my family, but it's just absolutely miserable to see talented people leave and talented good people who should not be leaving. It's sort of where journalism is today, but it never gets easier, and it absolutely sucks. And I know a lot of the people who were laid off this week at ESPN, including my longtime partner who I teach with, Jay McManus, who's a really good friend. So they all hit home, but that really, really hit home. So Jim Miller will be the guest. We'll bring him in, and we'll just try to give you sort of what we know and our take as to why this has happened. Now, here's my conversation with Jim.
This is Sports Illustrated's Media Podcast with Richard Deitch.
All right, and we bring on Jim Miller to talk about a topic that is not, quite frankly, fun to talk about, but obviously it's the major sports media story that is currently going on, and that's the ESPN layoffs. Jim Miller, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Jim, the final number of people who have lost their job is around 100 or so. I don't know the exact number, but I'm fairly confident just in sort of talking to people that, you know, it's either a little bit less or a little bit more. And there, and we'll get into this, there's still a lot of people who are going to be paid for multiple years. There are people who recently signed contracts that they essentially are paying not to work. And then there are the people, obviously, who were called last week and from bosses with human resources people listening on the phone told that they were losing their job, having essentially nothing to do with their job performance. That's a devastating, demoralizing, awful thing to see and to read and to hear. First, let's start with this, Jim. As far as you know, why was the number what it was? Because on this podcast, a couple of months ago, you thought it would be 40 to 50. It turns out to be double that.
Right. Well, I was focusing on faces that we would know and very, very forward-facing individuals. It turns out, as you can see from the list and the people who have you know, come forward, that it's not just, it was about 40 or 50, you know, faces that we know and big names that we know, but then they also went deeper and they kind of doubled that number with reporters and people who were just on the .com or affiliated with certain kinds of reporting, but not necessarily, you know, names that we would recognize, no disrespect intended. So it wound up being, you know, a pretty significant number in terms of talent, particularly for ESPN.
Okay, so let's get to the why. Why do you think, or do you have any idea as to what the management's reasoning was that the people who were laid off were the ones laid off?
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, it is kind of subjective. They spent a lot of time figuring out these names. And I think that as much as they're trying to push the words versatility and value, I think that they've in some ways cut off their nose to spite their face, because they're really talking about important people who were able to give the audience and people on the web real detailed deep background on, you know, certain sports. I mean, look, Andy Katz on, you know, college basketball, Jason Stark on baseball. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And so as a result, you start to think, okay, that was a level of expertise that the network had, that I think people were brought to, you know, and they were attracted to, and now they're not going to have that. So, while the words value and versatility are important to them now, I think you do lose something in that. And I think that, look, the National Hockey League and baseball both better look at this list and understand what that means in terms of ESPN's coverage of their sports, because it's greatly diminished.
Well, it means they're not covering it. I mean, they'll have hockey coverage, I get that, and they'll have highlights, but you can't get rid of your primary information brokers, in my opinion, in a sport, and continue to say that you are covering a sport whole. I mean, I think you'd have to go, we'll go through the different parts of this, and the basketball cuts are just absolutely outrageous. But I don't know how the network can. I think the honest thing would just be to come out, and they're never going to do this, of course, but to come out and say we don't believe we can make money on hockey. We have basically eliminated anyone who breaks news online in hockey, and so yeah, we'll give you the. You know, the Stanley Cup highlights, and we'll occasionally have Barry Melrose come on and talk about it. But if you get rid of Pierre LeBrun and Joe McDonald and Scott Burnside, the message to the public is we don't care about hockey. We're out of the hockey business. I don't know how otherwise you can say that's not the case.
Well, let's pull back for a second, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because one of the things that I think, I mean, look, it's a business, and you know, tens of thousands of car workers get laid off, and other people in different businesses get laid off. So, and we have to keep that in perspective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do think that in terms of ESPN and these 100 individuals, there's kind of an inconsistency, and it's, I guess it's easy for us to play Monday morning quarterback.
Very much.
To look at it. But here's the problem: they themselves were aware of these things years ago. So, I just think that there's been. If you started like 30,000 feet, there's kind of two headlines for me. First of all, it turns out they way overreacted to Fox FS1 getting into cable sports. I think it caused them to make a lot of talent deals that at prices that they wouldn't have done. I think it also made them much more ready to spend dollars, much more prepared to spend big dollars, particularly with the NBA, to make sure that you know, other people didn't have it.
Right.
And I think that they paid way too much. And it's not like we're saying it now. We said it at a time. And I think that as a result, things have not flowed particularly coherently from that point. I mean, and one of the ways to gauge it is, look at some of these names here. These are people that some of these people have rather long-term deals. And I think it's important for everybody listening to understand that this is not – These are not buyouts. These are pay, not play.
Correct.
So what they're saying to these people is, look, we're going to sideline you. You're not going to have to work, and we're going to keep on paying you. But if you go get a job, we're going to release you, but we're not going to have to pay you the rest of their contract.
Right. That's important.
So they're betting that these people, in fact, they're betting and they're hoping that these people are going to get other jobs.
Right.
So as a result, like, I mean, there are several people on this list, and who, you know, have multi years left.
Right.
Now you're telling me that, you know, when they made these deals, and by the way, one of the deals, let's just say, is somebody that they brought over from Bleacher Report, you know, rather recently, still has, you know, probably I think a couple years left on the deal. I mean, weren't they thinking about that at the time?
No. Let me get you hit out a good point. We probably talked to the same people. There are, I know of multiple NFL people who have long-term deals left that management knew. They had the long-term deals, obviously, and the cuts were coming. So they still signed the deals for these people, knowing that down the road there was going to be a day of reckoning. Next is that, from what I've been told, that there's no indication from management, at least at this point, that you can, and you mentioned this, that you can negotiate a buyout of your existing contract so you can work elsewhere. What's clear is that if you walk away or if you get another job, they're not going to pay you anything else. That's very much, Jim, a, you know, I wish I had some kind of like sort of like metaphor description, but, you know, it's putting the gun in small portions. Say again.
How about bad food and small portions?
Correct, right. It's basically like saying it totally game changes your options in that you have a family and you have bills to pay, so you know that you're getting money from ESPN for as long as your contract is. At the same time, they are hurting you by not allowing you to negotiate or to, I should say, they're not allowing you to move on to potentially another place where you might find longer.
Oh, no, they're allowing you.
Yeah, but they're allowing you, but you're not going to pay you what they had previously contracted you with. So that's...
No, what they'll say is, you know, listen, you're free to go someplace else, and please go get a job, and the sooner you get off our payroll, the better.
Right, but you're, I mean, again, you're more of a finance person than I do. There's an implicit contract, though, that says that we have agreed to pay you for this time, and then they made the voluntary decision to take, you know, to continue the contract, but not to use you as work. Let me ask, you might know this, and this must be some kind of an accounting thing where you can take the losses on the books earlier. But why would you continue to pay people not to work? Why would those people? Let's say you have tagged people as part of these quote unquote layoffs. You're still going to pay them. They're still going to be on the books for X years. Why wouldn't you allow them to contribute to your production if they wanted to? What's the sort of basis behind that?
Because then, let's say you owe John Smith two more years and, you know, $100 and times, you know, what you're trying to do, what you're basically saying is you think John Smith is, you know, aggressive, wants to work. It's going to kill him not to work. So he's going to do everything he can to go out and get a job.
Right.
If he goes out, even if you pay him for like a month, he goes out and he finally finds a job. You know what? You're not buying the rest of his contract out. So he's now being paid by somebody else and he's off your books. They are hoping and expecting that, you know, the majority of these people are going to go get other jobs. And for those who can't get other jobs, then they're going to be stuck paying out the rest of their contracts, which, again, just boggles the mind of why they would have done, you know, significant length deals recently if they thought that, you know, that there was a chance of this. I mean, come on, Noah built the ark before it started raining. There should be strategic planning meetings around talent back in, let's say, January or even last year about, you know what, it's very clear what's happening. SportsCenter ratings are flat. I mean, Scott Van Pelt's up a little bit, but actually some of them were
yeah,
down.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think you could read Van Pelt's ratings
depending on the way.
Yeah, he's sort of flat. Yeah,
but he's flat. He may
flat.
Be
he's down
bit.
In some
Let's
places.
Give him the benefit of
right,
but,
my
only point is
right.
The whole SportsCenter franchise. There's no secret about that. Meanwhile, you still haven't gotten an OTT. Going like HBO Go,
right.
And so I understand BAM's going to be developing it, but where is that? So that's going to hurt you in terms of losing, you know, more the subscribers that you're losing. And they are making efforts to get paid elsewhere with some of these other kinds of things that they're doing with the DMVPDs, they call it, you know, and they're getting some money out there. But the truth is that a lot of these problems that they're faced with are not overnight.
Yeah,
this is not a secret. So
let's Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You know, it's a tough sort of a subject to talk about because there's so much to talk about.
Go ahead. There's one other thing. Can you imagine the number was 100, right?
Yep.
ESPN tried to sign Colin Cowherd and they tried to sign Skip Bayless, and the numbers were north of 4 million on each of those deals. So let's just say 9 million for the two of them if the both of them had said yes. What would the number have been then if you had to add another $9 million in savings for labor costs to hire those? I mean, that's part of, you know, when you think about the context of all this, let's not forget that ESPN are still going to be spending money on talent. and they're going to be spending talent, money on real talent. And in fact, one of the things that I'm kind of looking forward to this year at Upfronts, which is, I guess, a couple weeks from now, is I think you're going to see I have no knowledge of it, but I think you're going to see a parade of ESPN talent on stage that you haven't seen in many years, because they're going to try and remind the advertising community and consumers that there's still a lot of faces left. It's just that they've defined a class of employee that they literally want to get rid of. And I think it's a mistake.
All right. I do want to get to, I want to get to sort of the reasonings, Jim, behind this, or sort of the overarching issues that why we are here today. And you obviously start with the rights deals. You mentioned the NBA. It's Monday morning quarterbacking, but probably overpaid for that. You'd have to obviously see who else was in the marketplace. And Fox Sports 1, and Fox Sports has, of course, had a major factor on all this now, since News Corp has endless amounts of money, and they're always going to be in the bidding. The NFL rights deal they had to have, they extended that in 2011 for $15.2 billion through 2021. That's $1.9 billion a year. That was 73% more than they had been spending. They got additional highlights. They kept the NFL, but this isn't anything anybody doesn't know. Their schedule on Monday Night Football is nothing close to what Fox has. They never draw the numbers on that. I think you can make the argument that they wildly overspent for the NFL product. At the same time, if they don't have the NFL product, they're not ESPN. John Skipper at that time called that deal fiscally prudent for us, said we will be able to absorb and continue to grow. That turns out not to be true, in my opinion. Here's a couple other things, Jim, that have really not been talked about a lot. They spent $125 million not too long ago on a studio. A former ESPNer called it Skipper Memorial Stadium to me. This is someone who was purged. And there's probably some truth to that. I know they, you know, you want to move forward and you want to be current and you need that studio to do stuff, but there's less studio shows now. SportsCenter, as we know, the highlight show is essentially done, or at least it's done in terms of it. You must go to it at 11 o'clock or 6 o'clock. You have disruptors with streaming platforms like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. You can purchase that stuff at a lower price than cable. There's cord cutters. There's cord never. So that's a very quick, Cliff Notes version that I'm giving you there, that there were all these things that came up for this day of reckoning that average, sort of not average, but you know, your rank and file has to now live with the consequences, those who were laid off. But the studio is one, Jim, that really isn't talked about a lot. And I think if you look in hindsight, $125 million for that thing. Look how many people were cut last week. Doesn't come close to $125 million.
Look, we talked about the layoffs 2 years ago, which were 300 people.
Right.
They just weren't talent as part of the repercussions of that. You know, back in the mid-1990s, Steve Bornstein was president of ESPN. You know what his email address was? It was steve@AOL. I mean, it just blows me away, because you know why? Because they were so forward-looking. They started in 1995, 1996 to get into digital at a time when people thought they were just crazy. Other people didn't even know what they were doing. And they were really forward-looking. And I think what happened was they had so much cash coming in, and they were obsessed with technology because technology had helped them so much in the past, and they wanted to be ahead of the curve, that look, before the digital center, there was 3D, and 3D was a huge pothole,
yep,
it turned out. And by the way, a pretty costly one. I mean, not in the context of $11 billion in revenue, but it was still pretty costly. The problem with the digital center was that it didn't speak to the future in a way that was consistent, I think, with what they were trying to do. I mean, look, I don't even know what John Oliver's set looks like, but people watch them. And the idea that at the time that the digital center opened, the big thing was these massive, massive sports center sets.
Right.
Actually, I think wound up hurting them, because all it did was we had a homogenization of sports center, particularly with the anchors. So everything was so big that we lost our connection. And because we had technologies that were delivering us that information other ways, I think it, you know, it was clear that they lost a lot of viewers. And I think that at some point we can, I mean, it's easy to be critical and I understand it, but at some point the forecasting, it seems like the long range planning, the strategic planning on ESPN at ESPN has not been as great as it used to be. And I think that you can't blame John Skipper for that because he's doing, I mean, ultimately, I guess the buck stops there, but you know, he's doing a lot of different things. And I think that, I don't think that the long range planning has been great. And by the way, these 100 people that just got laid off, that's another clear example.
All right. It's interesting. You don't, I think we both like John Skipper. Personally, I think we both think he's smart, but I don't know how the buck doesn't lie with him. I mean, in the end,
no,
it's his responsibility.
Does, remember something. Skipper is a content guy, and he has matured into a really smart CEO who understands the business exigencies, but he literally can't do everything. And I think that as a result, I think that there are times when he tries to do everything and it's impossible. And so, I you know, personally, I think he needed, I mean, back in the Eisner days of Walt Disney, they had a strategic planning group, which had its hits and misses. But I think that the idea of really, really looking ahead and making sure the collar matched the cuffs, which is that the money that they're spending, whether it's on a digital center or whether it's on a five-year contract with somebody who maybe who wound up getting laid off, I think that there wasn't enough of a connection, and it's hurt them.
Let's take a
look. There is a connection, though, with the NBA.
Right.
And you and I both kind of teased it a little bit here, but I think that the laying off of some of the NBA reporters is not about giving up on the NBA.
Agreed.
In fact, because they spend so much on the NBA, I think they actually want to go deeper. And so I believe it will be July, but there'll be an announcement coming out of Bristol that I think is going to, you know, I think they're going to wind up buying the vertical. And so they've decided to replace that model. I mean, bring Bojo in and bring the vertical in, and that means you don't have to have some of these other people around.
Well, that's why. Hold on one second. Let's just talk about this because I'm not sure I buy that. First of all, I believe they're going to bring Adrian Wojnarowski in. I believe he's going to bring in some of his people. I don't know if everybody from the vertical is going to be there. I don't know what the budget's going to be, but I think it's rather clear that this is what they are setting up for, which is quite frankly an incredibly remarkable occurrence given what Woj has said about ESPN over the years. He's been incredibly competitive with them. I believed he would have never worked for them. I think at one time he saw them as the enemy, and now incredibly the enemy is going to turn out to be his employer. But one thing here, Jim, if you believe that Mark Stein is a newsbreaker, which he has been, if you believe he's valuable on the sidelines, if you believe he's your guy and he has been there forever, I don't understand why you would not want multiple newsbreakers at a place. And then beyond that, and this is really where I think they have missed the boat, the people like Ethan Sherwood Strauss and Henry Abbott and those who are part of the True Hoop crew, that was like digitally native content that they developed, and give them credit for that. They created these sort of unique voices in this unique place and this unique style of kind of smart NBA commentary. So, yeah, I get it. You'll bring Wojnarowski in and the vertical in, and there are names there, and there'll certainly be news breaking. But you developed, it's almost like Grantland in a way. Like, you developed this unique, interesting voice. You developed this unique, interesting product, and then you gutted it. And even if you replace it with other NBA people, that's one I just don't get. They're committed to the NBA. They believe it's a sport of the future. They believe the demographics are young. Why on earth would you create kind of a digitally native product that speaks to millennials and makes you kind of look cool?
Well, you're forgetting one aspect. Let's just put it this way. I think sometime in the next 2 months, you might find yourself doing a column, which is that it was a binary proposition. Did ESPN clear out some of these people to make room, or were they, or was that part of the deal?
Yeah, I think it's very clear that if that's
I'm
the case,
I'm not accusing, but I will say this: that if you're coming over to a place and there are other places there, you might feel like you have every right to say, "Look, you know what?
I'm the guy. Clear the decks.
I'm the guy. Clear the decks." Or if you're ESPN, you're saying, we're going to clear the decks because we want this guy to really develop his own team. Now, whether or not that's a smart move or not, that can be debated. But it's pretty clear, given who has come over. And by the way, when you look at Henry, they paid a pretty good price for him, and he's worth it, to come over from the Bleacher Report. And I think he's one of those who has a couple years left on. So it's pretty clear that that's at work. I mean, I just don't want to be irresponsible and say who's responsible, who's responsible for that.
Right.
But it's clear with the NBA that they still want to stay in the reporting game, but they are clearing their decks for these guys to come over.
Right. Again, the only people who know why and what, it doesn't matter even like what happened. Ultimately, there's an ESPN management person who made these decisions. So talent can request anything. Ultimately, it's management who greenlights it. But the Mark Stein one is like the Andy Katz one is like the Ed Werder one. These are sort of, for lack of a better word, homegrown people. I understand Ed Werder worked elsewhere and Katz and Stein as well, but they've been there. They're part of the fabric and the framework of that place. They've broken a lot of stories. Same with Jason Stark. And should there not be some kind of loyalty? Especially, I'm probably more emotional on this than you because you have a legit business background from, major business school. So I don't look at it that way. Trust me, it's going to cost me. It's going to be while I'll be working at Starbucks one day. But it's very frustrating to me. It would be, let's put it this way, it will be incredibly frustrating if ESPN does hire big name talent from elsewhere for those who remain and for those who were laid off to see this happen. On an emotional level, you agree with that, right? It really looks like a slap in the face.
I'm not emotionally detached from this, but here's the thing. I mean, look, when I read Jason Stark, I love baseball. And when I read Jason Stark, I enjoy it. I trust him. I think he's damn good. And, so now they say versatility and value. Does that mean that I'm going to be getting my baseball information from a guy who's doing five other sports?
But that's bullshit corporate. You know that's bullshit corporates because but Jason Stark does radio, television, podcasting, and digital. It's such
– No, I'm not talking about platforms. Right. I think they actually mean – other sports as well. Now, Adam Schefter has gone across sports, but Adam Schefter is an outlier,
right?
And he's obviously incredibly talented, and he pulls it off. But my only point is, I love the idea that Jason was embedded in the world of baseball, and it was deep, and he served a lot of platforms. But now they're going to say, well, no, we don't need that anymore. We need some guy who's going to, or some person who's going to cover, a myriad of sports and all over the place. And it's like, well, then they're not going to get as much information.
That's where this is finally probably the best segue so far. This podcast, it's my fault. I'm not leading you in good places, but at least, we're getting what we need to talk about. But that leads to a good segue, Jim, in that if you're talking about versatility, if that's the right word, or value proposition versatility, this is why they obviously like the opinionists, right? Who could talk about multiple sports. The people who are still there, whether it's Stephen.
No, it's
you think it's different, but aren't you ultimately selling? Whether it's Stephen A. or people like that you can. You're hosting shows where it's a variety of sports and a variety of opinions, and we could throw you on SportsCenter here, we could throw you on ESPN Radio here, we can throw you on a podcast here, and you're not just sports specific per se.
No, I think it's more about it's the connection to the unique personality. I mean, look, if you like Stephen Colbert, you have to watch CBS.
Right.
If you like Jimmy Fallon, you have to watch NBC. I mean, if you're into having cold pizza in the morning and watching Stephen A. Smith, you gotta watch ESPN.
Cold pizza, that's an old school reference.
That's different than the other kind of information that's out there. I mean, they've come to the decision that they believe that whatever Ed Werder was reporting from Cowboy Stadium, or, you know, let's say Jason or somebody else, that now is somewhat generic, and you can find that on your Twitter feed from other people. So as a result, they feel like, you know, they'll sacrifice their couple times or that they break news or whatever for more opinionated stuff. They're going to be spending money. They're going to still spend money on talent. They have recently spent money on talent, and, you know, they're not getting out of the talent business. And by the way,
I'm going to interrupt you, but I want your opinion on this. But what you just said, they have made a place that really had made a commitment to journalism and a place that paid incredibly good money for incredibly talented people. The message now is that we do not care about journalism as much on May 1st, 2017, as we did on April 1st, 2017. I don't know how you can say otherwise. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I happen to agree with it. They're going to push back, and you'll see that they're going to make, you know,
yeah, OTL is going to get bigger, you know, and stuff like that, right?
Rationalizations about their journalism, and they'll push the things that they're doing even more, and 30-30 will be aggressive, and, you know, they're going to have certain vehicles that they're going to keep on, and they're going to push really hard. But it absolutely is true. And here's the other thing, too. People have to keep in mind, I keep on reminding myself, these 100 people who were laid off, this is like a grain of sand on a big beach in terms of them trying to solve all the problems. The 300 people that were let go 2 years ago, the 100 people that were laid off last week, this doesn't solve, this isn't over.
Right.
This doesn't solve their bigger problems. This is just one domino that has to happen in a continuum in order for them to reinvent their business and to be in a better position. I mean, look, today's May 1st, we're recording this, so May 9th, I think Disney comes out with earnings.
Right.
It'll be really interesting to look inside and see what's going on. You know, there was $800 million of advertising. What's going on there? Are they able to generate new serious dollars from some of these other sources that they've been talking about? But this is not by far. By the way, there could be more layoffs. There could be more layoffs this year.
I think given what has happened, given that the rights fees still, the rights fees aren't going away, they still have to sort of pay the freight, given that the subscriber rate's going to continue to go down, I don't see how there won't be layoffs within the next 12 months. I hope that's not the case, but, you know, I'm at a place where layoffs essentially are now part of the DNA, so I don't know how ESPN escapes that. I agree with you.
And by the way, we're in a lull right now. 2017 and 2018 are going to be relatively quiet. Thursday Night Football may come up. But then very soon, Monday Yep. Night Football and the entire football
Yep.
ecosystem opens up for rights. And you're going to have people from the outside. Who knows if Google's going to be involved? Who knows
Amazon.
Who's going to be bidding?
Yep.
And so they're going to have to spend serious bucks. It'll be interesting to see whether or not baseball will be up right after that. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they even want to spend money on baseball.
Yeah, let's get to that for a second, because obviously, as part of these layoffs, Baseball Tonight, whatever it was, is no longer. The show has been gutted. They're going to push back on this and say the brand still exists. We're going to be at big events like All-Star Game, Playoff, et cetera. We're still doing one on Sunday night, but it's gutted. It's gone. You can't spin it, given what they, you know, given who they let go, you know, from Jason Stark to Jim Capel to Doug Glanville, who was always terrific, Dallas Braden, Raul Albanez. You're no longer doing Baseball Tonight as you did before. You're bringing in Intentional Talk from MLB Network. So this is sort of the first of a, I don't even know how you'd phrase it, a job sharing or something, or outsourcing of baseball, which is interesting in itself. You're using a MLB Network, a league-owned show, property to put on your network, which really kills sort of the independence there. So, Jim, you may be right. I feel like, again, much like hockey, there was a significant statement here that ESPN made about baseball, and it's how it views baseball on May 1st, 2017 versus how it viewed baseball, let's say, on May 1st, 2015.
The startling thing, though, is, I mean, look, they don't have the NHL. NBC has the NHL, so, and hockey has always been considered, particularly by some hockey fans inside ESPN, as a poor stepchild. But the interesting thing is they spent a ton of money for baseball rights.
Yep.
That's a kind of head scratcher. I mean, we could easily be talking about the layoff list looking like it does, except for all these reporters who are connected to things that they have rights to, properties they have rights to. But instead, they decided to really kind of, I think, shoot themselves in the foot in terms of, getting rid of. I mean, the Jason Stark thing is just that just blows me away.
Yeah.
I mean, if Jason Stark is gone and they have the rights to the MLB, then all bets are off.
Let me tell you, because I just looked it up. It's not like I knew this off the top of my head. ESPN extended its Major League Baseball rights deal for $5.6 billion from 2014 to 2021. That's an average, Jim, of $700 million a year, and they don't have the World Series. I mean, think of that. So again,
whatever Jason Stark was making, and
right,
I don't
right.
want to
but let
say
me get let me get let me get to this quote. I'll let you comment on this. John Skipper again, and again, it's amazing to read this stuff in 2012. It's a lot of money, John Skipper, ESPN's president, said about the MLB deal. We don't do these deals without acutely understanding how to grow our business. In that context, it makes sense to us. All the same kind of quotes, Jim, and in 2017, they just don't line up anymore.
Right. So when you spend the $700 million a year and you decide to do that, one of the things that I think you need to do at the time is you have to make a commitment to go deep with that sport.
Right.
And so it's not $700 million a year. It should be $700 million plus, I'm just using Jason as an example, plus a Jason Stark salary. Because
yeah.
if you're going to have the rights to it, then you better be the best network covering it, and you better go deep. I mean, you know, that's just, I mean, and by the way, they're doing that with the NBA. I mean, that's why they're bringing, if they do wind up bringing Adrian, that's what they're doing with the NBA. So I think this is a really interesting statement that they're making about baseball. I think it's an interesting statement that they're making about hockey. And it may be that, I mean, for all we know, maybe they've decided that they're going to be the football, they're going to be the NFL, college football, and NBA network. I mean,
yeah.
maybe that's what it's going to look like.
Well,
you know?
I mean, I think it's tennis too a little bit, but it's starting to look like that. We are Monday morning quarterbacking here, but in hindsight, some of the numbers that they paid for this stuff is, I mean, when you now look at it in 2017, is absolutely incredible. But you know, at the same time, Jim, we know this. You got to program 5,280 hours a year. You do need live rights. They
8,700.
So I'm wrong. What am I talking about? And so, this is why they did this stuff. You can't just do studio stuff, Sports Center stuff alone. Another topic, again, what a terrible segue by me. Another topic that I want to hit on, and this is something we have talked about on multiple podcasts, and this is where I think I'm not going to change my opinion, but it's going to be sort of modified a little bit, and I'm really curious to get your take on this. Linda Cohn, I don't know if it was last week or this week. Apologies. It's been a crazy week with me and my family. I've been out of the loop a little bit. She said something to the effect that those who ignore the politics problem at ESPN are blind, and that part of the layoffs were related to people turning off ESPN because of politics. So Breitbart ran that. A lot of ESPN's competitors who've been pushing the narrative that people are disconnecting with ESPN because it's too political, they've been pushing it as well. Here's where I want to get into you. I think we both agree, Jim, that the market forces that we listed early in this podcast are the reason why ESPN is where it is. That we live in a different era now, where cord cutting exists. They've lost millions of subscribers from their highs of 99 million to 100 million. Those are millions and millions of dollars when it gets to 88, 87 million homes as opposed to 99 million homes. We have cord nevers, millennials in particular, who have never had a cable package in their life, and they get their stuff through Netflix or Hulu or Xbox, et cetera. They overpaid for rights fees. I think that's very clear. They probably overpaid for talent. At times, they paid, as we mentioned earlier, an incredible amount of money for a studio that I feel like is a little bit of a white elephant. I don't want to hear from ESPN people. I understand its value, but that's still a ton of money for that. Now, Jim, getting to the politics one, I don't believe, and I think you don't believe either, that there are any kind of mass numbers of people who actively call their cable company to say, I don't want ESPN anymore because I heard one of their anchors say something about activism or Black Lives Matter. I think that's totally bogus. I don't believe people call a cable company to get ESPN off because they will still watch their network for sports. Where I do believe they have an issue, and I think a bigger one than I probably recognized until the last couple of weeks or months, is I think they have a gigantic narrative issue where I do believe there are people out there who believe that the network is pushing all this stuff all the time, and it turns them off to the network. So even though they'll watch live games, I do think that they're not going to watch some of the studio programming because they believe, and it's probably an incorrect fallacy, but they believe that the network's come too political. That's my long statement. Please go as long as you want off that.
Look, Senator Moynihan had an axiom. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. I just don't see, from a business point of view, a lot of facts and a lot of metrics to support the fact that people are leaving ESPN because of their quote-unquote political orthodoxies. And by the way, within that, I think people would be really surprised that inside Bristol, there are many conservatives.
Correct.
And there are Trump supporters. There were people who didn't like Obama. There are people that have never voted for a Democrat. I think those people have a tendency to keep it to themselves. But the whole idea that the network has turned into some political cable channel, I just don't see a lot of. From time to time, some talent talk about it, but I don't see a lot of evidence that people are leaving ESPN in droves because of it. I don't think it's significant. If they have, it's not a significant number.
Okay, we agree on this, but let me play devil's advocate a little bit. Are we looking at this too much in an East Coast bubble? One person who lives in New York City, like I do. You're a guy who works a lot in New York City, and you live in Pennsylvania, and obviously, you know, you've traveled. I don't want to call you an East Coast elitist, Jim, but you're an East Coast person. Are we looking at it as coastal elites who take the Amtrak, even though neither of us take the Amtrak? Like, I want to ask you that. If we were based in Baton Rouge or Columbus or Salt Lake, well, Salt Lake City actually is probably not the best example because a lot of pockets of liberalism there. But you know, if we were in Montana or South Dakota or Texas, would we look at this differently? Are we framing it because of where we live?
I don't think it's a geocentric perspective. I think it's a business perspective. I think people are, you know, I think people are leaving the cable bundle has been, you know, incredibly damaging. It turns out to ESPN. People, it's very simple. People don't like paying for something they don't use.
Right.
And so, you know, my mom for the last 25 years, if she could have opted out for it, she would have. But, you know, the truth is beyond that, I just don't see it. I don't see the metrics behind it. So it's not about, you know, where I'm coming from on that. If it was a business thing, I mean, look, the NFL owners were upset about the Kaepernick thing.
Right.
Because they did not like the marriage of politics and sports on the field. They like when there's a football game that you put everything else out of your head and you're just absorbed in football. And it's one of the great things about, you know, having everybody over on a Sunday afternoon. You don't even know who's Democratic and Republican or whatever. It's just about the football. And so the Kaepernick thing was a big, big deal for the owners and for a lot of people at the networks. But in terms of ESPN, if Stephen Smith says something that, you know, in support of President Obama or something like that, I just don't see a lot of people calling up their cable company and canceling the service. They may not watch him, but I just don't see it. I don't see the record.
Again, there's two issues here. There's the perception of liberal culture at ESPN, which I think there's a lot of truth to. And then there's the impact on the financials, which we both agree there is not as much truth to. So I'm with you on this. I agree with you. There will be people, obviously, who will both say we're missing the boat on that.
But you just said, though, that you believed about the liberal culture.
Well, here, I just want, let me just finish. Let me just finish. I think there is a, I agree with you on the financials. I don't believe it. I believe that is the bullshit of bullshit, and I believe a lot of the narrative is coming from places that are competing with ESPN in terms of it's hurting their bottom line, in terms of people giving up their subscriptions. It's a specific thing. But I do believe that they do have a big narrative issue out there in that there are people who believe that the network is basically one long MSNBC promotion, and that is a hard battle to fight in the public sphere. And I do think that probably impacts somewhere along the line some ratings points. I don't think people have abandoned ESPN or have turned in ESPN with their cable company, but I would argue that I bet you it has had an effect on some day blocks or night blocks that people might not turn the channel on because they believe this is what's coming there. You don't subscribe to that at all.
You know what? I mean, the honest answer is I have not dug deep enough into ratings of particular shows that have had. I mean, they don't. These shows don't talk about politics every single day in terms of
they barely do it. It's a canard, of course. It's
people. So yeah. I think that there's. If we just think about it for a second, I think there's a perception and then there's a reality.
I agree.
I think that it's clear. I mean, I look at my Twitter feed and it's clear that a lot of people feel this way. And whether it's fair or unfair to ESPN, they have to recognize that. But I can just tell you from knowing these people who work there, I think that it's beyond mythology to think that this is, you know, in the middle of Connecticut, the Bristol campus is this liberal bastion. It's just not true.
You made a great point. I agree. We both know executives who, they'd be walking with Gingrich in a parade. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think, I don't know. Maybe I've sort of just been inundated so much with people who are letting me know that they believe this is what ESPN is all about that I'm seeing it more. But it's anecdotal, but it does feel that there's this that there really are people who strongly believe that like this is what the network is spewing all day, which is not true. We both agree it's factually not true, but the problem is to sort of beat down. A factually not true narrative is very, very tough. And
look, at the end of the day, if this was ESPN's biggest problem, they would take it in a second.
I agree.
The problems that they have are much more serious, systemic, and quite frankly, much more challenging. I think that Disney has been very patient, and I think that it's no mystery, though, that they've actually called out ESPN for being a drag on the earnings in the media group. And they used to cover that up a little bit. And now when you get the earnings reports, it's clear because of ESPN programming costs and whatever. The question is, how much time does ESPN have to get things on a better trajectory and also create a narrative where people understand that it is a growth story and that they have a positive future? How patient is Disney going to be, the Disney board of directors and shareholders, or is there going to come a time, and I'm not saying that this is around the corner or whatever, but it's just interesting. This is a big moment in time for ESPN history. Is there going to come a time when if they can't figure out a different model and they can't project that narrative into the marketplace, in the minds of consumers, or more importantly, to Wall Street, is there going to come a time when Disney is going to either say, okay, you know what, we need to make change, or we need to sell it off, or whatever. I think that the next 2 years of ESPN are going to be probably two of the most critical years in its history, mm-hmm. because the next 2 years are going to, in some way, inform what the network's going to look like for the next 10.
All right, I want to We got about, I know you got to go in about 10 minutes. There's one last sort of reporter group I want to get to, and that's college football. And I don't know how many people you've talked to or how many people within ESPN you've talked to, but that one was a bit of a stunner to me in that they have these multiple deals with conferences. They obviously have the SEC Network and the Longhorn Network. And so to see, like, someone just as sort of wired and plugged in as Brett McMurphy, and to see some of they got rid of one of their SEC reporters, Greg Ostendorf. They got rid of a guy who was covering the Big Ten. David Lombardi was a college football writer. I'll think of the guy who was covering the Big Ten in a second. So that was one, Jim, that I didn't really understand in that, you know, college football for them is, I feel like it's still a growth spot, and they've obviously paid a fortune for the Final Four and championship game. They're obviously all invested in with these conferences. So that, Chantel Jennings, another one who's a college sports reporter, young, very talented. Like, maybe you have a sense of, I understand if you got to get to 100, you got to get to 100. Brian Bennett was the Big Ten reporter I was thinking that was really good.
Explain. Ted Miller, Lombardi.
Yeah, Ted Miller, and Danny Cannell, obviously, they got some on air people as well. But can you explain that one to me just in that, like, not that I like it, but, like, you know, I understand the rationale for hockey in theory, and I understand the rationale for baseball in theory, but college football makes no sense to me, Jim, in that that's a sport they have invested in heavily, and they're still all in. So how do you get rid of a guy like Brett McMurphy, who's arguably the best newsbreaker in the country?
Right. Well, you know, a couple years ago, I worked with Sandomir Nieder on this investigative series for the New York Times, and we wound up going pretty deep in college football, and I could have written a whole book on it. I mean, it's a very complex system. I think they've spent around $27 billion, if you look backwards on some of on these recent deals. I mean, once again, though, they've made a decision that, particularly with, like, the Big Ten Network has its own and the Longhorn Network has its own and whatever, that they decide that people are going to be able to get this information elsewhere. And as a result, if they can get it elsewhere, then, you know what, maybe they don't have to pay for it. And maybe they don't have to be so extensive about it. And it's a decision that they've made. Obviously, they didn't start out wanting to be like this because they hired a lot of people. And, I mean, if you look, for many, many years, ESPN spent a ton of, these people were, so many sports writers who were laid off in newspapers always kind of could make ESPN the next call, right, the moment they found out.
Yep.
And the exact opposite is happening now. If it's not proprietary, if it's not exclusive information, they feel like people are going to get it elsewhere and they don't have to pay for it. And as a result, once again, just like with the, they're going to have a lot of money that they're spending on rights for sports that they're not going to be covering as deep or as well as they did before.
Do you think the ACC network, Jim, will launch? The digital part is obviously going to launch, but do you think they're still going to be committed to going in on an over-the-air network in 2019, a linear network, or do you think now maybe that's off the table?
I wouldn't count on it. I mean, I think that that's part of, you know, the recalculation that they're having to do looking forward, and particularly since, you know, that time is going to be on the eve of some of these big right deals that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And they're going to need to save money. ESPN, I think that they spent a lot of time looking at trees. And so, you know, some of these talent deals, for instance, we can get him from the Bleacher Report. Okay, so we'll hire him and we'll give him this money and whatever, instead of looking at the forest, which is, like, can we really afford all these people? And is it part of our model going forward? And so I think that they're going to start spending, I mean, it looks like, in order to solve their problems, they're going to start spending more time looking at the entire forest and making sure everything fits into more of a strategic plan for the network, as opposed to all these different little things. And then all of a sudden, one day you wake up and you have to hire, you have to let go of, you know, 100 people, many of which you've recently hired.
Yeah, it's weird in that for many years, as you said, that was by far and away the ultimate destination. If you made it to ESPN, you felt like, you know, you were set for many, many years. You were going to be paid great. You were going to have the chance to do great work because they had all these resources. And the interesting thing is they were so wealthy and so powerful that they could actually afford to outspend their mistakes. You know, you bring in like a Ray Lewis for whatever multiple millions. He has no really impact on your ratings. And he leaves and you hire somebody else. Again, no disrespect to my colleague Rick Riley. My old colleague Rick Riley was always great to me. I'm glad he made a ton of cash, but he didn't game change ESPN. He came in, he made a ton of money, and then eventually his contract ran out and he left. And
listen, Walsh not only looked like Santa Claus, he was Santa Claus.
Correct, right. So it's crazy now that we're talking about this on May 1st. And to your point, they did treat, and this was great, obviously for our profession, but forever and ever, they were essentially an ATM that could spend on anything and everything. And last week was a day of reckoning. And I guess, you know, and as we'll finish up here, and I don't have any sort of great takeaways, it just sucks that, like, there were many people who sort of paid the price for this, who clearly had nothing to do with the decisions that were made prior to them. And yeah, I get it. You made ESPN, you made a lot of money for a couple of years, but, you know, I'll just sort of personalize it. To see my friend Jay McManus get laid off after doing great work for a number of years, not based on any merit, and doing work at a place where very few people were doing work on issues of domestic violence and sports and criminality. It's just, I don't even know what the word is. It's just depressing as hell.
Part of the sadness of all this is they've made a decision also about the pedigree of their brand, because a Jane McManus is not just about a ledger and about whether or not somehow she's justified her salary or whatever.
Right.
It's also about the pedigree, and it's about going, having that kind of skill set and those kinds of voices in your world that you can be incredibly, incredibly proud of. And, it's all decisions. It's all about triage. And right now they've decided that it's clear how they're feeling. But I think the thing that just kind of pisses me off, and it pisses people off inside, is that you don't go 100 miles an hour and then you just slam on the brakes. There was a way to just, instead of running these very, very expensive dashes, particularly with rights, but also with some of these other talent deals, there was a way to kind of manage it so you wouldn't be letting go of people who were there for 17, 18 years, or people like Jane, or people, you know, to really, really do like some of the best work in their fields. And again, just think about what would happen if Coward or Bayless had said yes. I mean, it's just, there seems to be money. It's clear they've decided where their priorities are now.
Yep.
And with limited resources, they've shown us what they want to do, and maybe they'll be right.
To answer your question, by the way, if those guys were hired, there would have been another 100 people laid off. They would have came in and said, you have to have the Coward and Baylesses to make money. They support the journalism. I always feel like that's a little bit of a canard kind of BS. In some cases, yes. In some cases, absolutely not. Jim, you have to go. So I'm going to leave you with the final word here. I want you to, if there's anything else that you want to say, you should get out. I'm not sure I did the greatest job on this podcast leading you to different places, but I did want to get something out today, and you're obviously an important voice on this, and you're very well connected, but it's a shitty topic. I mean, I get it. It's a sports media story, and it's a huge one, and you have to talk about it, you have to cover it. I get all that, but there are lives at stake, and I am shaped clearly by the fact that I have seen this happen at my place essentially like 9 years in a row, and it's never ending, and it's exhausting, and it makes you honestly want to go in another profession.
No, it's very tough, and I don't want to suggest at all. I don't think anybody who's heard me speak on this thinks that I'm emotionally detached. I'm just trying to look at the underlying reasons why it happened.
Yep.
And how we can somehow figure out if they can prevent it from happening more and more, because it's in their hands, and there are ways to do it. So, you know, you plan better for the future and you make certain decisions that are in concert with some of the other things that you're trying to pull off. But it's a very tough time. And look, we should also say it's a tough time for those who have survived.
Correct.
And who are still.
Yeah, survivor's guilt is a real thing in organizations.
Yeah.
Last one. You have talked about or hinted at the fact that you are going to do you're sort of going to come out with additional I don't know how to phrase this. I don't know if it's a new book, but you're going to take wherever you ended on the old ESPN book and advance it and talk about the years since that book ended. Given what happened last week, will that change your timeline of when you might start writing an additional addendum to the ESPN "Those Guys Have All the Fun" book?
Well, it was never going to be like it was going to be a separate volume. It was just going to be like a volume two, and it was going to start from the day after. And I mean, clearly, when you and I talked about this, I mean, part of the reason why I was attracted to it is because it does have kind of a different narrative than the first volume, and there are things like Grantland and yep. Overman and SportsCenter and layoffs and all these things that you know weren't able to really do in the first volume. But it would be a separate volume, and I just haven't been able to decide whether or not I can do it given some of my other responsibilities. But I got to decide pretty soon.
And then lastly, you want to mention the podcast that you're about to launch, because it's unique and interesting and not a content play, at least in podcasting, that I've seen before.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm kind of excited about it. It's it's called Origins, and it's not going to be like a weekly podcast. We're just going to do chapters on very specific things and look at how they started. Part of, I think, the cool thing with the SNL book and ESPN book and even the CA book was just the beginnings of those organizations. And so it might be like a record album or a TV show, and you go back and you talk to the principals. And, you know, it's all about that bizarre game of shooting ladders that start where, you know, you have like a small victory, then you have a setback, and then this one gets fired because they had a great idea, but they're not fit for doing it. So it's going to be across movies and television and sports and even relationships. I got in the midst now of scheduling interviews with a couple of people about how their relationship started. And in one case, led to marriage, and the other led to marriage and then divorce. But just this idea of, like, you know, beginnings. And so kind of looking forward to it. Thanks for mentioning it.
You got it. Jim Miller, of course, is the author of These Guys Have All the Fun, which is the oral history of ESPN, also the author of A Oral History on CAA, and his remarkable Saturday Night Live book. You can find his work in different places, including Vanity Fair and elsewhere. My thanks to him. My thanks to producer Lou Pellegrino for the quick turnaround job on this podcast. Thanks to the people at Digital Media and at Sports Illustrated for supporting this podcast. We're going to be back later this week with a sort of the regular podcast, and that's Royce Young, who covers the NBA for ESPN and has a pretty remarkable story that you may have read about or seen on Good Morning America. Pretty amazing what he and his wife have done, and I look forward to speaking with Royce. All right, for everybody who's a part of this podcast, thank you, and thank you for listening. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.